What is it about visualization that you feel that the brain can interpret that information much easier? In terms of the kind of the psycho nature behind it, what is it about the person who draws it and gets it on paper? They feel like the increased capacity of understanding the problem. Do you have any thoughts on what it is about the human mind that just drawing allows us to understand things a little bit deeper?
I think it's a really nice question because it has so many layers. And I just can't really talk about my experiences with visualizations. Yeah, yeah. And the first step is about bringing out the ideas and bringing them to paper, which means that I'm taking time to think, to reflect, and thinking about the connections and kind of a not linear, but kind of a dynamic way.
Hello and welcome to Bringing Design Closer on This Is HCD. My name is Jerry Scullion and I'm the founder of This Is HCD. I'm a designer, educator, design coach and podcaster based in the wonderful city of Dublin, Ireland. Now, our goal here is to have conversations that inspire and help move the dial forward for organizations to become more human-centered in their approach to solving complex business and societal problems. Now, as many of you know at this stage, I work on these episodes and these podcasts as a labor of love. I love sharing the work of others, and I know many of you enjoy the work that I do too because I see all the wonderful reviews. If you want to help support me and This Is HCD, maybe you might consider by becoming a patron. It's under €2 per month. My goal with having this model is to meet the costs to produce everything. We're still miles away from doing so. But if you want to learn more, maybe just check out thisishcd.com. Now, a number of months ago, I was researching for my keynote that I'm giving in UX Scotland this year, and I stumbled across the work of Superdot Studio in Switzerland. And I was blown away by all the amazing work that they have on their website. And I was honestly so thrilled, I was so happy to see that they were in the process of publishing their book titled Visualizing Complexity, a Modular Information Handbook. I purchased it, and from the moment it arrived on my desk, and I'm not joking when I say this, it has never been too far away from my hands. It feels just absolutely beautiful to hold it in your hands. It's really, really, it's a rich texture on the book. I show it to many people on my Zoom calls every single day, and I've showed it on many of the trainings that I've given over the last number of weeks. I've recommended it to many of my peers. Why? Because I just believe that this book is absolutely beautiful and it should be something that I think many of you will be interested in. Now, I feel so lucky to have this podcast, as it allows me to reach out to people that I truly respect and connect with them over a conversation. And I did just that with this book and this episode. I connected with Darian and we had an amazing conversation. Now, we explored the process that both he and his partner Nicole follow when visualizing complexity. Now, one of the things that struck me most from this conversation was just how analog the process of brilliance is. A lot of what I took away from this conversation was just how much space and air that Darian and Nicole leave in their work to let things sit, to reflect and include elements of structured exploration before arriving on a visual language and approach to their work. Too often I find we, and I include myself in this folks, have tools in place and in mind when we are researching that we always fall back to. As in, many of us know that we'll fall into that category of like, well, we'll be creating a journey map or a blueprint as we know that this worked on X projects before. This isn't what you'll hear in this conversation. We talk about the process deeply, how they move from chaos to simplicity. It's a fantastic episode and I hope you enjoy it. Let's get into it. Darian, a very warm welcome to This Is HCD. I'm delighted to have you on the show. We were just chatting there, having the crack, as we say in Ireland, about everything to do with the wonderful book that I managed to get my hands on a couple of weeks ago. I actually bought it myself. I saw it and I was like, this is one that I need to have. But Darian Hill, very warm welcome anyway, but let's start off and tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. About myself. So I would say I was born in a country which doesn't exist anymore, which is former Yugoslavia.
Okay.
And grew up in Vienna and finished my first master in business informatics and worked for IBM and had a great job as a student to write the meeting, the decisions of the meetings, which were, you can imagine, quite boring. And we had the development team, which was in a different country, which was kind of different culture. And then I realized that my communication skills were not really good, because the things that the developers were programming were not the ones what the client wanted. So actually, that was my entry point to visualizations. That I just realized it's much easier to write down the requirements and draw them just with some lines and boxes and sketches.
Yeah.
And there was anyways always this magical moment that as soon as something is kind of externalized and put to paper, it gets kind of clear and people start to communicate more about the thing. And and then I started scanning my sketches. They were not good, but they were just sketches. And somehow the whole cycle of kind of the loops of bug fixing were smaller. And that made me think that I should maybe study, or kind of, I was actually asking myself, why are we not taught in any kind of study program, business, informatics, history? Why are we not taught? Why do we not learn to draw, to express ourselves? And somehow that made me afterwards, I landed in Switzerland. I worked for a bank, but I still was always thinking about this moment of drawing. And somehow this graphic facilitation and graphic recording was not the thing I really aesthetically, I didn't like that. Yeah. So I applied to study again, and that's how they accepted me at the University of Design and Arts in Basel, with this long tradition of Swiss design and typography. Yeah. And I had the honor to study and to do a master's, and that's where Nicole and me met. And from that moment on, we started doing everything and working in the direction of information design.
Yeah, and like the book that you've created, for anyone who hasn't looked at the show notes yet, is Visualizing Complexity. It's a modular information design handbook. And one of the things that whenever I opened up the package and I held it in my hands, I went, this is not an ordinary book. You can get books out there, you know, many books in Book Depository or Amazon, and you open up, it just doesn't feel the same as this book. This book is like, it feels very, very, I want to use the word sensual, but it feels just really rich and very well thought out. And when anyone buys it and they hold it in their hands, they should see the craft that has gone into this. It's just a stunning book. And not just stunning in terms of it looks beautiful, but the content, the way it's structured, is really, really well done. So I know Nicole Lachenmeier, who is the other part of Superdot Studio in Basel. It's a beautiful book. And I feel like I do know you a little bit when you were telling that story there a little bit, like a good visualization at the back of the book. It shows the timelines of how everything is all connected and how you guys met and studied together and formed Superdot. So what is it about visualization that you feel that the brain can interpret that information much easier? In terms of the kind of the psycho nature behind it, what is it about the person who draws it and gets it on paper? They feel like the increased capacity of understanding the problem. Do you have any thoughts on what it is about the human mind that just drawing allows us to understand things a little bit deeper?
Yeah, I think it's a really nice question because it has so many layers, and I just can really talk about my experiences with visualizations. Yeah, yeah. And the first step is about bringing out ideas and bringing them to paper. which means that I'm taking time to think, to reflect, and thinking about the connections and kind of a not linear, but kind of a dynamic way how things are connected. So that's kind of a, like a yoga, like a step of meditation and bringing that to paper. So that's the first step of slowing down. And that's why actually I always talk about or kind of the way we work and also maybe the story behind this book. Every page that you see in your hand has been done by hand. So all these 200 pages and all the examples and every little piece has been drawn either by Nicole or by me in a lot of iterations. So we have around 800 pages from these 200 pages in our cupboard. So that was, I would say that's the first quality of making sketches and drawing and kind of making variations. The second step is that making a variation, which means that as soon as you have the first sketch, you have an idea for the second one. And as soon as you have the second and the third, you realize you start understanding the content you are sketching. So kind of it, like the stupid kind of case is that you say, if you start drawing one flower, the first drawing of the flower will be the obvious one. The second, you will maybe see some highlights of light. The third one, you will see shadows. The fourth one, so you every time you will understand something more about the flower. So kind of redrawing, your understanding is bigger. And then on the other hand, what every designer knows is as soon as you have a sketch, somehow people dare to give their opinion. Normally, if something is in text or something is hidden in text or hidden in a database or whatever, people normally say, yeah, yeah, that's okay for me. Kind of, I don't understand coding or something anyway, so it's good for me. As soon as it gets visual, people have an opinion, which is not always easy for designers kind of to deal with that opinion to like, okay, sometimes these opinions are going the direction that they say, I like it or I don't like it. You're like, okay, it's not about liking, but okay. Mm. So I think there is this human nature which is coming into the game as soon as you have drawn something that people then have an opinion and they have a connection to it.
Yeah, there's a really interesting quote which I have in one of my courses, which I've just brought up by William Playfair. I don't know if you know William Playfair, the creator of the bar chart and the line chart and the pie chart. And the quote is, tables are by no means a good form of conveying information. Making an appeal to the eye when proposition and magnitude are concerned is the best and readiest method of conveying a distinct idea. And it's, you know, people kind of go, oh, that's a relatively, you know, recent thought, but that was from the 1890s. Mm-hmm. So when you think about how long we've been talking about this thing about making visual elements of complex systems, it's been around for centuries at this stage. So the type of illustrations that most people listening to this podcast would be familiar would be things like journey maps and service blueprints and just research structures, you know, affinity mapping and so forth. But in your book, one of the things that struck me was the sequencing and how you go about making complexity a little bit easier to manage and visualize. Are you able to talk a little bit more around your process on how you approach complex systems and visualizing those?
I would just kind of, I would answer it very fast with one word, with an open mind. So we approach complex with an open mind, which in the end, which means that, and also what we were trying, I mean, we were discussing a lot if we should make a book at all.
What was the resistance behind that, Tarion? Why would you second
that? There's so many books, you know? There's so many books. There's so many good books. And they are books from Edward Tufte. They're old books. They're kind of old masters, which are like more than 100 years old. You just have to look into the books and you're like, okay, this is amazing. So we were really, I mean, we're a couple and we start to discuss and we are very critical on each other. So I said, okay, we should do a book. And Nicole was saying, no, we should not do a book. Who gives us kind of credit to do a book? So we were, that was the first point. But then there was this moment where we said, actually, and that's coming to the complexity, there is no book, or we don't know a book which is, so there are many books which are giving you advices with do's and don'ts. So this, if you have this, do that. If you have that, do that. This is the right chart type for this problem. This is the right solution if you have that one.
Yeah.
But actually, what we learned in school and the way our kind of mind at least works in our studio is that there is no right and wrong. So, or let's say there is no general, for in our philosophy, there is no general, how do you say, rule. Because sometimes people say red is an alarm color. I mean, tell that to the UBS. Their corporate color is red. Their logo is red from the bank. So you have to work with red. So I would say our kind of really intention was that we said we want to show the beauty of experimentation. We want to bring down the recipe of making visualization to really the little pieces. And we don't say which one is to be used in a certain situation. We say, make your own experience. Try it out. Show it to your friends. Show it to somebody. And let them judge if they can read it. Let them observe them if it's interesting. So that's actually the general approach and the process behind the whole thing.
So it's iterative, is what you're saying. Like that whole process of putting it in front of people and seeing if it makes sense. And is that right? Yeah. Is that your approach?
And so, playful. So what playful. The fun factor is somehow really important.
Yeah, it's the bit that really kind of struck me around the book was the narrative that goes through it is the family. Okay, this family. Do you want to talk to us about where this family came from and give us the origins? Because when I was, it's in some, at the start of the book, you do say, it's not meant to be read from front to back. Okay. It's more of a reference piece. But then when you start mentioning the family, I start to just feel somewhat kind of interested in this family. And I was like, well, I'm going to keep reading to see where, how they've evolved over the generations. So I did find myself reading chapters. So maybe talk to us a little bit more around where that came from. Okay. Because it's a really nice anchor point in a book. That's what I'm saying. It's not a case of this is a map, this is how we did it. It is a step-by-step process of how you actually sort of attributed the data, the raw data, and took it forward. So maybe talk to us a little bit more around the origins of that whole kind of thought process. Yeah.
So the origin of that is that we started with the book with in the Swiss mountains. We said, okay, let's just kind of hide for 4 weeks and think about what is the book about.
It sounds really idyllic.
Yeah. And you have to know that Nicole is a perfectionist when it comes to design. So she thinks about everything. We call her sometimes that our typography police. So kind of really goes in everything. And I'm the perfectionist when it comes to content and kind of to the red thread, which goes from the beginning to the end. And for me, Nicole and we were teaching information designs since years. And we always have the problem that students, which are in their bachelor years, like first year, second year bachelors, that they're struggling with abstract data to translate the data, let's say about forests and the density of a forest and the volume of the forest, that they're having difficult times to translate that number into a mental image, into afterwards a visualization. And there are books, you will find books which take in every chapter or in every visualization, they take different data types. So kind of a different data set. So kind of the one graph is working with climate, the other graph is working with, I don't know, population and so on. So every time you read that book, you have to first start thinking about that data set and think, okay, what does it mean, climate? And then you have to decode the first the data yeah. and the image and then start understanding it. So I said to Nicole, when we were hiking in the mountains, I said, it would be really cool to find that one universal data set that every human being knows. And then we were thinking about a lot of things. And at some point I just said, okay, everybody has a family.
Yeah.
Every human has age. Every human was born somewhere. Every human died somewhere. And every human has a gender. And then we started kind of constructing and deciding on one data set that could go over the whole book. And then we started kind of designing that family based on really statistics. So actually I looked up the statistics of the past century. I looked up what is the most frequent name in the British or kind of the English speaking area and the one from the German. So actually I took the names, it's kind of the statistics behind, and then that's how actually the whole family data set.
Very cool. Yeah. Now, one of the things that I sometimes find myself falling into the trap of, if I'm researching and I've kind of gone through the data set and I'm trying to pull out the key quotes and, you know, the things that are wrong with the service or things that are going well with the service, it almost like it feels like, okay, well, I know at some point I'm probably going to do a journey map and I'm going to do maybe a blueprint and I fall into the habit of using the same kind of templates, the same structures to visualize the data. What struck me about this book in particular, and I don't mean to become a salesman, but I just keep on talking about how beautiful this book is, but do you have a really broad set of templates that you sometimes fall back into? And do you have names for those sets? And if so, where do you get them from? How can I increase and how can our listeners increase the visual language that we're using to visualize the complexity that we find ourselves researching in?
Yeah, I think it's somehow that question is going a little bit into breaking the patterns that people kind of create. Or maybe I misunderstood the question, but what I would understand is that yes, when people see graphs and when they see possible solutions, or if they see time, let's say that there is data with time, that you will immediately think about the timeline. And if you think about that, if there is data about cities, you will immediately think about a world map, even though you know that kind of as soon as you start putting your pins on a world map and you are talking about Switzerland, the density of the pins will be very high compared to Russia, which has a very big surface on your paper. And basically what we try, and also what we try to do with the students, is the first sketches they create is the things they know and the things they frequently use. And then we ask them to break that pattern, to say, okay, do you have some other ideas?
Yeah.
What would happen if you would not be allowed to use a map at all for mapping, for kind of cartography? How would that map look like? So then why we did this is to say there are so many things. So kind of there are so many possibilities. Think about these little pieces, the elements, and how can you combine them in a crazy way? Risk it. Risk something new and see if it works.
Yeah. Well, what I'm hearing there is you're treating every data set as a unique opportunity to visualize it. Whereas for people like myself and service designers, we kind of have a suite of tools that we tap into, much like business people love to use pie charts and line graphs and so forth. But what your approach is, and if I'm understanding this correctly, yourself and Nicole in particular, is it's pen and paper, and it's back to grassroots in terms of how we approach what is the best way to visualize this versus the kind of off the shelf and then interpret it. And I think that speed to visualize is something that came through in the book. The speed to visualize complexity and the kind of export functionality that we have in software is doing us a disservice, because it's not actually providing us with the richest opportunity to visualize what's actually happening. Am I speaking out of line here? Is that yeah, kind of?
I agree. I completely agree.
Yeah. So in that, what are the skills that you teach in information design then? Because people like myself would really love to learn how you got from, say, when you were working at IBM and you were, you know, kind of visualizing those meetings. What are the things, and if maybe we could have a list of five things that you'd look for in what would make a really good information designer?
First, a tidied, clean, well-structured table.
Okay, let's talk about that one, okay? Because that's everyone is leaning in to their car as they're driving. They're like, a clean table. Now, you're not talking about a kitchen table. We're talking about a table of data, okay?
Exactly.
So that would go, if you take that one from very face on, you know, the quality of the research is impacted. Like if you've got a really bad process about you know, creating the data, you're going to get a really crappy table in the end. So how do you work to ensure that you've got a really high quality data set in your table?
So there is actually no project where we do not have to reorganize and clean the data that we get. So kind of we get them, but then kind of we have to, the first thing is what people, probably everybody knows, is that you go in Microsoft Excel or something, and then you kind of throw away all the formatting, kind of all the yellows and the blues and and the font sizes, and just bring them to kind of this raw format. And then observing kind of what dimensions, like kind of what columns and what rows you have, and if that makes sense, and how are they actually nested, what kind of in what way, and if it makes sense. And actually, we very often send the spreadsheet, kind of the Excel sheet, we send it back to our client and say, please, there are a lot of gaps. Could you please again go over your data? We highlighted for you the kind of our questions, and in the end, we need one or two rounds of data cleaning and also content-wise cleaning, because at that moment, we ask ourselves, okay, what are possible perspectives we can take to make that visualization? That for sure is, that's actually the yellow chapter of the book where I put a lot of effort in kind of explaining that data is not only data. So kind of data are perspectives on your, I said it's this kind of cube, and kind of what perspective do you have towards that cube?
So in the, say you've got a really clean table, you've got an opportunity then to weave a narrative through that table, like the patterns that you're starting to observe. Who is best placed to design or define those narratives? Does that come from the client, or does that come from yourself? Because you know, and I know, there's many ways to interpret the data set depending on the objectives.
So once we observe, let's say, different angles of storytelling, we bring them in very raw sketches to paper. And then with these sketches, we go to the client. We call that the clarification meeting. So we go to clarify the kind of the content. And the reason we do that really on paper is it looks and it has to have that feeling of work in progress.
Yeah.
Because if it's still in Excel, people talk about that one, the functional side. If it's done already and put into a template, a perfect looking graph template, even though you can tell 100 times to your client, no, it's work in progress. We are still in working, but it looks too good. That's why we really, it has to look like a hand-drawn sketch so that we can talk about really the story we want to kind of tell together with the client.
So in that sense, there's probably quite a lot of bias that could be brought into that, because the client looks at it and goes, listen, we're not that corrupt. We're trying to reform ourselves. So that's not the story we want to tell. So there's always, yes, I'm looking at Exxon and all the oil companies, like, no, we really do care about fossil fuel. Or we don't care about fossil fuel, should I say. But yeah, so you're at that point, you keep it low fidelity. I love that. Okay, right. So we've covered off the high quality table is one of the things that Darian is like, he can put his head in his pillow when he's going to sleep tonight, kind of going, okay, tomorrow's going to be a good day. The table is clean.
Exactly.
So what's the second thing that you think that would make a really good information designer? So the ability to have a good clean table, number one. What would the second thing be, Darian?
I would say to be brave enough, even though of time pressure, because a lot of times you have time pressure. So the reason people tend to maybe go very fast to work on the computer and or to use templates is because you have time pressure or budget pressure.
Yeah.
So making a good cup of coffee, sitting down, giving yourself 2 hours of time, listening to music and starting to think about possible solutions and drawings and being brave enough to go into something completely maybe crazy or which doesn't make sense. And then by having different variations, then you can see, okay, this is the one extreme side, which will probably not work. And the other one is kind of the obvious side everybody knows, and where is on that scale, where are the other ones and what are the benefits of it? So kind of looking at what you have, and for us, it's very important to lay out all the sketches next to each other. So we have big walls and we put them always, the whole history, the whole process is on the wall. Because then automatically you start seeing patterns. Kind of if you look at one thing at the time alone, you are just at that one problem. If you have a lot of problems next to each other, then you are not afraid anymore.
Yeah. So bravery is probably what we call that, like brave to block out time to explore. And then brave to give your time to absorb and really connect and see. Can you think of the third one? If we were going to say, well, we'll do, I know I said five, but we'll do three.
Okay.
So the clean table, bravery being the second one. What would the third one be?
Probably at that point comes kind of, after the bravery comes, you should probably curiosity, because at that point you will be like, I think I discovered something. Maybe I need to research more. Kind of, there is that step of curiosity and looking kind of, does it really make sense? Can it be that simple solution would solve the problem?
I love that.
And I think that's the turning point. And then you have to sell it to your client. they have to like it. You have to approve it and say, okay, that's it. Yeah. And then comes the kind of realizations again.
Yeah. So how often would you be in a situation when you're doing this, you might have to go back to research and conduct more research to get a better outcome? That iterative process, would you go right back to square one in terms of alternate research methods and stuff?
Yeah, going back to zero actually never happens, kind of to square one. But because every time I always tend to say that kind of in the beginning, if you start working with a data set or kind of a strategy or a concept from a company, you have very little knowledge. And you just see kind of that problem. And by working and researching, your understanding actually of the whole problem, I would say, kind of the closer you are to the solution, or kind of the more you know about the solution, the more you know about your problem. Because actually just when the project is finished, then you will be able to say, now I can tell you what that kind of the big challenge of in this project was. But you can tell it just actually in the end. It's going to be very difficult to really say it in the beginning.
Because you're a lot closer to it. You've examined it, you've explored, and you've done 20, 30, 40,000 micro decisions to get to that point. And yeah, that's the whole beauty of, I guess, prototyping. You're spending a lot of time in prototyping, and that hand-to-mind connection is so rich. I have a question for you there. With the book title, it's Visualizing Complexity. Why complexity, and why not say visualizing data? What was it about the word complexity that, you know, made you include it in the title?
Because we don't even have then that many data visualizations projects in our field. So actually 50% of our project is about, can you visualize this concept? Can you visualize this strategy? It's text. So bringing it down just to numbers would have not covered the whole field.
Yeah.
It's more like it can be text, and out of text, you have to find a way to explain the text or the concept or the strategy or whatever. Or it's in the numbers. So you're explaining and making data visualization. But in both cases, it has to do something with complexity. So that's why we said it's visualizing complexity.
I love it. There's another thing that I wanted to ask you a little bit more around. Number one was obviously the clean table, as you'd say. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about AI and the ability to generate visualizations on the fly, and people leaning into it in a big way to answer all the world's problems? What are your thoughts about that and its interconnectedness with the clean table?
I would say to these people, good luck with that. I see that. I see this enormous acceleration and combinations which have not been there in very little time, and taking all the resources in the internet and combining them into a new fusion of something. I see that. I think we have to find a way that our daily work has a so that's why I said maybe before brave. We have to be brave enough to resist to the pressure of our client, or to find a way, even in the most boring content and data set, to have fun with that and to take time to work with that, to find an interesting angle. And that kind of is a very good feeling, like a body feeling after a day that you created 20 different drawings and sketches. Mm-hmm. And that makes you think, and that kind of brings this slow kind of, it's not really slow, but kind of, let's say this slow work brings you to reflect, kind of gives you time to think, does it really make sense what we are doing here? So that brings you to that kind of crucial questions, where at some point maybe you really have that simple graph where people are like, why did you need 3 months to make that graph?
Exactly.
Because with ChatGPT or something, I can do that in 3 seconds. That's nice.
Yeah.
But the it's also about me, my process, and it's also about having a reason to live, having a reason to work. Yeah. And if we externalize everything to others, then we don't have anything. So that's why I would say, I still believe that we will come up with much better solutions if we have time to think.
Yeah, absolutely. Darian, I could speak to you for about 5 or 6 hours nonstop about this stuff, but you know, we want to try and wrap up the conversation within 40 minutes on This Is Hate City. Just people I know, they like the short synopsis of what we're trying to do. What I'm going to do is I'm going to put a link to Superdot Studio, your studio in Basel, into the show notes of this episode as well. Put a link to the book as well. If possible, folks, if you're going to buy the book, buy it from Superdot Studio. Don't buy it from that big book company. I can't remember what it's called. It's like After a Forest or something. I can't remember. My mind's gone blank. I'm only joking. Buy direct from the authors if you can possibly do that. But Darian, if people want to reach out to you, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Easy. I'm actually answering a lot of emails and social media things. I'm trying to be very kind of 24-hour answer type. So yeah, on the website, there is an email or over social media or anything. So just kind of, you will find me. I will answer.
LinkedIn, yeah, absolutely. We'll put a link to your LinkedIn anyway. But Darian, cool. Listen, look, thank you so much for your time. Let me grill you about the book. Best of luck with it. And also to Nicole as well. Stay in touch. Big fans of you over here at This Is Hate City.
Thank you.
There you go, folks. I hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you enjoyed it and want to listen to more, why not visit thisishatecd.com, where you can learn more about what we're up to and also explore our courses whilst you're there. Thanks again for listening.